Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
All right. Hey, everybody. Don Williams with Andre Luciano today for our Inside College Soccer Podcast. This is a special episode. We're going to focus on the transfer portal, what we know about the NCAA transfer rules, which isn't everything, but what we know, and talk about the mess that we see happening with transfers in general. Hey, Andre, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. How are you guys over there in NorCal? Good?
Just as good as you guys are in Vegas, except a little cooler. That's all.
Yeah, perfect.
All right. Andre, we've been talking off the air a lot over the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks as a staff about what we thought was coming. With the NCAA transfer rules that are affecting primarily just Division I, but it will be a trickle-down effect across all divisions, I guarantee. We estimate it could be upwards of 2,000 additional kids in each gender that are entering the portal because they get released as the NCAA caps the number of roster spots for Division I soccer teams at 28, from what we understand. Is that what you understand also, Andre?
Yeah, so, I mean, part of that is depending if athletic department decides to opt in or opt out of the NCAA lawsuit and how revenue distribution is going to be made, right? And so some programs are opting in, some programs are opting out. In terms of revenue sharing and, every piece of this puzzle is different. You know, there's no clear picture in terms of who's doing what. So I think there's a common misconception that, hey, you know, the roster cuts are going to be at 28 and everyone's going to get 28 scholarships now. And that's not necessarily the case. It's kind of, school by school. And, you know, I've even heard of Division I programs and different sports also having their scholarships cut to make room for, you know, some of these changes. And so I think there's a lot of misconception. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of information out there that really nobody knows what the truth is behind it. And so, you know, what I'm hoping to do is kind of point a little bit of a, you know, hey, this is what I'm hearing. This is what's going on. These are the trends that I'm seeing and try to help people navigate this a little bit better.
That's what we're here for, to try to clarify some of those misconceptions, right? Based on what we've heard and what we know.
Yep.
So let's start with this opt-in versus opting out. Now, there are those that are saying that it's going to be very difficult for Division I schools to opt out because so much money will be flowing into those schools that opt in. What do you say to that? What do you know?
Well, I think the Power Fours, you know, there's going to be a lot more revenue that's going to be, you know, flowing into those programs, and it's going to be a little bit easier to distribute the revenue, but I don't think that it's going to be across the board because the NCAA has also said, and part of this lawsuit also says that, a major chunk of that money is geared towards football. Like a massive amount of money is going to be geared towards a percentage towards football. And then the other one is going to be men's basketball. And then it trickles down to the different sports, right? And so, you know, I've heard everything from, hey, you know, you might get an extra $250 to, you might not get anything to, you might get, you know, $1,000 here, $1,000 there, more. And so I think it just really depends on, you know, what programs that, you look into. And then there's some like FCS schools that are non-bowl eligible schools. They just don't have the money, you know, and so they're also having to pay, you know, money into this NCAA lawsuit to pay for, you know, what's basically, it's a football and basketball thing. And there's lawsuits going on right now with those states filing appeals saying, hey, why should our state schools have to pay into this if we're not the ones being, if this doesn't affect us, it's not our players that are creating this. And so I just, like, rather than kind of put a general statement out there, I think I would like to find out exactly what each institution is going to do before making a general statement in terms of like who's getting more money on the opting in or who's going to opt out. There's a lot of things that, you know, we don't know. And I think people have this assumption that it's good. It's going to be a great thing for everybody. It's not. And I think that there's going to be some cuts, you know, some schools have to make cuts to make room for this whole thing. But I think everybody has to understand this is really, it's a football basketball generated issue. It's not a soccer generated issue.
Yeah. The non revenue Olympic sports are being drug along behind the boat as it speeds through the water. We don't even get to ski behind it. We got to get drugged by it and just hang on for dear life. It's going to be difficult. Look, there's certain schools, the state schools are going to struggle the most. We all have heard for years, that Akron, for example, has been struggling in Ohio, and they've been talking about folding it in with Wright State. Just financially, it's been struggling. Can you imagine that now having to put an additional burden on a school like that? Or in California, we have these Cal States like Northridge, that they don't have football revenue, right? Everything is generated from within what the state gives them for the most part. There's no athletic revenue per se at a lot of smaller state schools. And so it's going to be difficult, and there's going to be some difficult decisions that have to be made. I think you're right that we're not going to be able to blanket across the board. All Division I schools are going to respond this way. I think there will be some that reorganize into different divisions. I think you'll see some that go down to Division II or Division III. We've saw one of those this year, didn't we?
Yeah.
And so I think that could continue. And I think there could be a long term solution that comes about that covers the non revenue sports. In other words, maybe football and basketball at a certain level break off on their own and they're not even governed by the NCAA anymore. Something like that could happen too.
Yeah. So like, how does that, you know, like, so there's two portions of this, right? It's number one is, how does it affect the current student athlete that's on a roster, right? And so if you are on a team that has 35 players and all of a sudden the NCAA, you know, has this mandate, like, hey, we're going to have to drop to 28 players and your school's opting in. So now as a coaching staff, you're sitting there trying to think, you know, oh man, what do we do? Right. We've got 35 players. We have 7 players that are graduating. We have committed, you know, 7 players to fill those 7 players that are graduating. Are the players that are coming in, do they have, a bigger impact on our program than the 7 players that we're looking to release? Potential impact into our program, right?
Right.
So I think what really is going to happen is the players that are currently on rosters that are 28 and above, they're going to have to try to figure out what are their options, right? And so their options are either, you know, drop into the transfer portal. And if you're playing on a power, like a major program, I'm not going to say Power Four because I think soccer has programs that are really strong at both levels. And so what happens to those players that were number, let's say 29 through 35? Either they say, hey, you know what? I still want to continue playing Division I and now I got to find another school. They're not going to go, you know, level apples to apples, right? They're probably going to have to find a program, Division I program that maybe is not as so that they can become a number 22 through 28, right, on that program versus number 35. And so I think there's going to be a flux of those players in there. I think you're going to have a lot of players that maybe are not getting playing time like they think that they want to get are going to enter the transfer portal as well. I think you've got, you know, a market of Division II players. I think they should be playing Division I, which is, you know, difficult to do unless you're like an All-American. I think you have some Division III players who are looking to do the same thing. You've got junior college players, which is a great, like I'll give you a great example. Like I had an assistant coach from a Division I program go to, you know, went to watch junior college games in Texas, junior college games in Arizona, and just went to Iowa to watch some junior college games. He told me, and I'm a JUCO product, so he knew what my thought process was on this. He said the level of play between the two teams that I just watched was better than the Division I level of play. These players are good. They are men. They're structured. The quality of training that they're getting is very good. Some of the facilities are better than Division I programs. These guys that are at the junior colleges right now are better than most 17-year-olds and 18-year-olds that are at academies, right? And so,
and that's coming from a Division I, an experienced Division I coach.
Oh yeah. There's just like there's no comparison. You know, there's no comparing a 17-year-old kid with a 20-year-old kid, right. A 20-year-old man, right? That has been playing, that's playing a total of 50 games in their career. So I think that this misconception that I'm just going to enter the transfer portal and I'm going to get picked up is really, you know, I think it has to be evaluated by each player and figure out if you are going to enter the transfer portal because you're not getting playing time and you have a locked in roster spot on your team, you might not find anything, right? And if you are looking to move up, right? Cause nobody looks to move down. It's very, very rarely do players want to move from Division I to Division II. I always ask players, what's your why behind all of this? Like, what is that you're trying to get out of it? And if they're sure. I want to play more. I'm like, well, then you go to a place that you're going to get quality minutes, right? Don't just look at the label. And then this is the problem. They're like, well, I kind of want to cash in on whatever's going on the other side. And I'm like, that's not really happening, right? These schools are not just throwing out money left and right to players that are not going to come in and be massive impact players. So I think you're right. I think probably that transfer portal, that initial window is going to balloon like crazy. And here's the thing, Don, is that the Division II coaches, they know that. They know that this is going to go blow up through the roof. So now all these 2025s that are sitting there holding off on Division IIs and pushing back and saying, I don't know, they're going to lose out because now the Division II coaches know.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. They know that all of these players are going to get released. And so they're just like, I just had a message back and forth with the coach and they're like, I know that the transfer portal is going to blow up and we're looking for older, more experienced players because we're really young. So we're going to hold tight and we're going to look at, you know, the transfer portal, what's happening. And so I think that you got to be really, really strategic in how you do things and how you're looking at things going forward, because this is the time of year. And you know, as well as I do, that if you're not getting playing time, your team's not having success and you're a freshman, you're typically like, well, I should probably look to transfer. I want to transfer. And sometimes you got to just tell these kids like, look, you need to pump the brakes because it's a really, really difficult road right now to navigate.
Well, it's funny when we talk about the transfer portal. Look, I don't have access to it, but I've seen screenshots of it. It's basically the name of the school that the kid's at, the kid's name, how to contact the kid. There's no film. There's no place for to put their film, what their major is, what their budget is. Even, you know, how many years of eligibility the player has. There's very little information for coaches. So for those players that aren't getting a lot of playing time, that don't have collegiate film, for them to go into the transfer portal expecting to get picked up by the same level or better level than what they're at now when there's no film of them. Coaches will pull Instat. They'll pull the film and they'll see there's no film of this player, or they'll look at the roster, at the stats, They'll see the player doesn't have any minutes or only has 60 minutes this year. They know there's no film of this player playing. There's no way for that player to prove to coaches that they can play at that level currently, the player that they are now. It's going to be really, really difficult for some kids in those situations.
Yeah. And there's, and I've talked to staff. There's actually certain members of certain programs, their staff, that's their whole job, is to sit there and look at the transfer portal and go through it one by one and evaluate, you know, go through each one positionally and try to get as much film as possible. I mean, there's designated people trying to do that, you know, and some of these staffs, and, you know, that takes like a fourth or fifth player or fifth coach, right, to do that. And I can't imagine trying to comb through 4,000.
How would you have done that at NAU though, or me at my schools where I had one assistant? That was basically all. How would you do that?
Look, and you know, I think that the coach at a mid-major will look at the transfer portal as either, hey, this is a great way for me to augment whatever I'm losing, right? And so I'm going to rely heavily on the transfer portal.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, I want to be not as much of a risk taker with a freshman. I want to just rely completely on the transfer portal. And I've seen coaches do that. They rely, like, they bring in 6 or 7 players from the transfer portal to do like a major overhaul or quick fix, right? And typically, right. And typically I don't think that works really well, because the culture of the team just changes, you know, dramatically. But when I was at NAU, and this is pre-transfer portal, I was very adamant about, like, look, you know, I will recruit players that I recruited before that are looking to transfer back to us, because they decided to go somewhere else that, you know, it made sense. You know, like, look, you know, if you are getting recruited by Florida or Santa Clara, or you're at Portland and you decided not to go to NAU because those are better programs at the time, 100%, I get it. You know, no hard feelings. And if you decided to come back and transfer back, great. But I rarely was looking to bring in a player that wasn't getting much playing time, you know, to augment my program. Like, what's the point of that? Like a great case is this, like Hugo Bachrat, right? Who was at Farley Dickinson and transferred to Indiana. That guy was an All-American at Farley Dickinson, right? And he had one last year, or he had 2 years left. And he's like, okay, where can I go that's going to give me the best opportunity to follow a pro path, right? So he goes to IU, has a really good season at IU. And then he gets picked up by MLS, right? Because they had a really deep run in the NCAA tournament, and he got more visibility and the coaches were able to see him more. And so he was able to get
sure.
That totally makes sense. Like that totally makes sense. And it's funny, yeah, because some of these academies overseas are telling me that they're struggling now, like the gap year academies, they're struggling because the guys that are over there taking a gap year, they don't even want to look at a mid-major. They're just looking at, like, I just want to go to the top program. And they're like, you know, like, you need to be open to everything, you know, like, be open, go make your name, go be successful. But don't just assume because you jump in the transfer portal, you're going to land on the top, like one of the top programs across the country. And so I think the reality is that, some coaches are going to rely heavily on the transfer portal, and some coaches are like, you know what? And I think the proof is going to be on what is the success rate of the kid that goes into the transfer portal.
Of course it is. Yes.
Right?
It's
the proof long term, yes. Right?
Proof is in the pudding. Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think basketball is a different situation, and so is football, because there's so much national attention on these guys, and they already know who these guys are beforehand. And, you know, they might have gone to a mid-major because there wasn't a roster spot or there wasn't a scholarship available at the time at the other school.
Mm-hmm.
Once they come in, they make a name for themselves. You know, they make the NCAA tournament. Now they have a name for themselves. Now a roster opens. Now they have somebody also. Here's the thing. You know, there's a lot of agents that they're working with saying, hey, this is your time to move now. Like, now it's your time to move. You've done well enough. It's time. They're getting that advice. Like, it's time for you to jump ship, right, and go to that other program and cash in on that. I just don't think soccer is really there yet at the collegiate side of things. That
no, I think rowing's not there yet. I think golf isn't there yet. I think track isn't. You know what I'm saying? You can go through all the non-revenue sports that people don't pay any attention to unless you're in that sport. Don't pay that much attention to. It's going to be difficult. This is a, as you said earlier, you're spot on. This is a football and mostly men's basketball decision.
Yeah. And then that's the other thing too is, cause like I follow a couple of programs and there's kids that transfer. There are like all conference, first team, all conference players that transfer within a conference to another program.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't scored a goal or haven't played a minute because it just takes that time to adjust, right? You have that adjustment period as a player. It's like a European player a European player very rarely transfers to a new club and has success immediately. When you go from one country to the next, right? Different league.
Yeah. So, even the best in the world tend to struggle with. I remember Bergkamp going into Arsenal and went a slew of games without scoring a goal and he couldn't get his rhythm. The best in the world struggle. Yeah.
Yeah. And so like, look, when we look at the transfer portal, then I really look at the international, professional side of things. And that's how I look at it. That's how I explain that to kids. I'm like, look, why would I invest money in you if you have zero stats at your club? Like why would I spend money bringing you here if you've been sitting on the bench at this school? I want to know that you can perform. And so, even like the players that go off on loan, right? When they go on loan somewhere, it's to say, okay, go get some minutes and let's see what your valuation is.
Right.
Right. Let's see how we can raise your valuation as a player, because right now we don't value you as a player. Right. Go make a mark. Go make somebody else better. And what's going to happen? And then the last part, Don, is that since the NCAA lifted the amount of times that you can transfer, that has changed things too.
Yeah, because it used to be you could only transfer once at the Division I level. Now you can transfer five times, I guess.
And you had to get a release. And so now there's some players are like, okay, so this is how I'm going to game this. I'm going to game the system this way by hopping here, here, and then finish here. And coaches know that. And there's some coaches that are like, it's okay for you to come for a year. You can transfer.
Right.
We
expect. No, there's certain levels and certain coaches at certain levels that have operated that way for years. And I'm not talking about junior colleges. That's obvious, but I know there's NAIA coaches who have said, look, come be an all conference player for me and I'll help you transfer if you're that good. I don't mind using you to help our program even for a year or two.
Yeah.
And, I think that thought process may now bleed over to other divisions, not just NAIA, for example.
Yeah. And so like classic for us is that usually when we get someone that's asking, for help with the transfer, like communicating about like, hey, I'm thinking about transferring. And, we try to get like have you gotten a release from your coach yet? No. But usually when they fill out an application with us, like, hey, let's just talk, can we talk? And like, what level what are you looking for? And they're like, well, I want to go play Division I. That's usually the first thing that pops up is like, we're looking to play Division I. And then you're like, all right, so let me look at your stats. And you look at the stats and you're like, you don't play. How are you, like, who's putting this in their head that they're good enough to play Division I if they're not even playing, at a different level? That's really where I try to.
But Andre, this is what goes on at every level in the world. And I tweeted this one out the other day, and it's not a new thought, but if you're the 14th best player on your 7th place team in the 3rd best conference in the country in the 39th best state in the nation, and you want to go play for Stanford, who's putting that idea in your head? You're ranked number 52,000th in the country and you want to go to the number one school in the country and be a starter is utter insanity. It's crazy.
Yeah. And then the last part is, I think from a generational standpoint, like I think about my generation now, like I would have kids in college, right? As a parent And, you know, we very rarely have these conversations now, like, hey, why don't you just try to stick this out? You know, like try to build off of this, right? Like I think about my 2007 through 2011 years at NAU. In 2007, we had never been 500, right? It took us a long time because our AD was like, you need to cycle through your players. You can't cut your players.
Right.
Right. So it took 4.5 years to get, like 4 years to get those players cycled out. And so then you're always trying to measure year four, year five, right? Where are you as a coaching staff? So 2007 was like, okay, this is our big freshman class. And we were 7-7-5. We were 500. And that was like big, but we had seven freshman player, right? That played, that started. And we go through this. Not a single kid in that group said, hey, I'm going to look to transfer, right? They're like, we're going to stick it out. We're looking to build something here. That group won three conference championships, right? Through the next 3 years, they stuck it out. We called them the foundation. That was the name I gave that class. You guys are called the foundation. And they stuck it out. And a sophomore class came, or a freshman class came in during their sophomore year, and that was the first championship. And everybody stuck it out, and they believed in that, and they went through the process. They graduated. I brought in a big class the next year in 2011, two or three injuries. Those seniors that were there, that was like, okay, this is our time. We're the seniors. We struggled. We had a couple injuries, 3-9-7, right? But those players weren't looking to transfer, right? Now, I get more calls now from kids and from parents of the kids talking about, hey, we're thinking about transferring. I get that more now than at any point before when I was a college coach. And part of it, I think, is because transfer portal is now an acceptable thing, right? It's not looked at as a negative thing, which in the past used to be a negative thing. And now it's almost become trendy.
Right? Yes.
It's trendy to go into the transfer portal. And like, you know, people never used to talk about like, hey, I'm looking to transfer because I'm, you know, they never really talked about it. Now it's like, it's open, right? And so that's why I think there's more and more talk about the transfer portal. And the reality is, Don, it's still the same spots, number of spots that are out there. It has never changed. It has never changed. It's just another marketplace. It's an accelerated, it's a NCAA, junior college system, basically. Come in here. Here you go. I'm putting you into this transfer portal. It's like a JUCO. It's like a junior college, you know, pool players.
Well,
like
Andre, you know. I'm talking to kids and families that are proposing this concept to me. Look, I'll just commit to a 4-year school and then I'll transfer. I said, wait a minute. Isn't this a, this feels a lot like me that like that's going into a marriage and you're saying, look, I got nothing else better going on. We'll go ahead and get married. But the second I find somebody better than you, we're getting divorced and I'm leaving you for them. In the meantime, let's get married is what it feels like to me. And as a coach trying to build a program, I would find that repulsive. And I don't want you anywhere near my program if I smell any piece of that. Because this is our family. I'm spending a lot of time and investing a lot of time and effort into you, and you're investing a lot of time in me and us and we together. And then we've got these one or two from the outside that are only using us to try to get to somewhere better. They don't want to build what we have here. They're not really that interested. So my advice to my clients, at least, Andre, is do not do that. If that's what you think you want to do, go test yourself at junior college first. That's what it's built for. And then go be an All-American. And then that school that you want to be a part of would be more interested in you because you're a proven product than you would be, like you said, as an unproven 17, 18-year-old coming out of high school. There's better ways to do it than to try to use. It just, it's usury. It just doesn't feel good to me. I don't know. And
well,
people say,
I just think it's acceptable. It's just like an acceptable thing now. And now because it is, and it's like everybody talks about the transfer portal. Everybody talks like today, the talk's going to be about, NLI. That's going to be, I mean, I've gotten like seven texts about NLI.
Okay, all right. For everybody that doesn't know what's going on, catch everybody up.
So national letter of intent, right? Which has been the standard for the NCAA to use to sign your national, you know, your scholarship. Which was like a standard day. You have a first day and then, you know, opens up. you would sign your scholarship and okay, you're locked, you know, the NLI recognizes it, kind of locks you into your scholarship for a year. Well, the NCAA just dropped that, right? And so now kids are like freaking out because it just got posted on social media and like everybody's talking about it. You know, it's just kind of spread like wildfire. So now that's the only thing anybody's talking about on social media, right? And I think social media.
So how does this change things?
I don't think it does. It's just, it's to the institution, right? It provides the institution, the ability to write their own scholarships and to, okay, negotiate with the student athletes. And here's your scholarship. This is our financial aid agreement, which is what they've always done, right? And, but it's institutionally driven now. It's not on NLI. It's not a national letter of intent, you know, letterhead, right? So I don't think it really changes things. I think it makes it somewhat easier for a lot of schools, like in terms of negotiating their NIL contracts in there, because there was no way to put that in there in the, you know, the NLI.
Yeah.
But I just think that it's now going to be a trend that everybody's going to talk about, right? We live in the hashtag trend world.
And so yes, that's our society.
Whatever, right. So whatever we want to trend, whatever we want to talk about, we put some hashtags on it. We throw it out there on social media and it gets populated and circulated. I think the transfer portal is a good thing because it allows some kids to get out of situations that, you know, they didn't feel like it was the right thing. I think some coaches are going to use the NCAA roster cap to release players from commitments because they were like, I don't know if you're going to be a player that we don't want to look bad, right? Now we're like,
It's not our fault. We have to cut seven players. Right? It's not our fault.
But not everybody's doing that, right? I know not everybody's doing that. And then, you know,
And to be honest, Andre, for good reason, if their athletic director hasn't told them and their president hasn't told them how their school is going to operate, how their team and department are going to be operating under the new guidelines, whether the school's opting in, opting out, if they don't know yet, I wouldn't be releasing.
They're gonna play safe.
I don't think I'd be releasing players that I want to commit here yet if I didn't know that I had to. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's schools that are like, we don't know. Yeah. We just don't know.
Man, I don't know what I'd do.
So I think the transfer portal, is a thing, you know, it's obviously going to stay here. It's here. I think there's a lot of, misinformation out there in terms of like how easy it is to get recruited. You know, once you look to transfer, I think it's a really difficult thing. And at the end of the day, Don, you still have to be a good player. You still have to come in and help a player. A program, you know, have, you know, grow.
And you have to be able to prove it, by the way. It's not.
Yeah. Yes.
I get this. I train really well in practice every day. I'm one of the best players in practice every day. I don't know why coach won't play me. Isn't going to help you.
No, I don't think so. And then, you know, I think the other part about this is that, you better be really mindful of your why behind all of this. If it's only to play soccer, I would say go the JUCO route, save as much money as possible, get your 100 and 200 level classes out of the way. Then, you know, then figure out, okay, I got two years out of this. Do I still want to play? At what level do I want to play at? And if you're serious about it, like, okay, now I'll look to transfer. Maybe I need a little help. Maybe I don't. But I think everybody has to be really, really honest about where this is going. Cause the stat is what 55% of kids don't end up or don't end up anywhere afterwards, right? What's that?
It's like 60% on the men's side and 50% on the women's, something like that, that didn't get picked up last year. And I haven't seen the current stats yet. I don't know if they've released them. I need to Google it.
But yeah. Yeah, and
the numbers
are
big.
Yeah. But with more volume coming in, right? And less spots, that number of who's not going to go, not going to get anywhere is going to increase, you know, it's going to increase. Like, so I think 65% maybe won't find a new home. And I think part of it too will be players not willing to accept playing at Division II, at Division III, or even going the NAIA route.
Right.
I think they would rather say, you know what? I've tried this. You know, I made a go of it. I'm not going to play Division I, which was like my end goal at the end of the day. My end goal was to play Division I. And they get there. It doesn't happen. They're like, all right, I'm out. But I do think that there are a lot of good players that are out there, like you said, just have not been seen. And so what do you do? What do you do when you use your film from, you know, 2 years ago, as a 17-year-old?
That's a question that people are asking.
And then the same situation happens, right? Which is, hey, I want to see film of them. Like I have players in Europe trying to get film, right? And it's hard. Like, hey, we like them, but we need to get more highlights. So what do you do? You provide film from when you're 17, 16, 17 that you used 2 years ago.
That didn't work for you 2 years ago, by the way.
It didn't work for you 2 years ago.
You were sending it out to every coach in the country and it didn't, you were posting it on X. You were posting it on Instagram, and it didn't work 2 years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what do you do as a coach? You're like, well, that's great. I saw him. This is from 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Like one what of my, look boys, like today, yeah, right?
Like one of my boys, he's a 22 goal kid. He graduates 2025 and he has film from 2022. And I'm like, man, this doesn't work. We need to see you as a man.
You look like a little boy in the film.
You look like you're like this thin. We need to see you as a man right now. I was like, oh, and now I get it. So I think some kids need some help. I think some kids need some, but I do think that a lot of college coaches, I think would like to see kids go the JUCO route and then grow in that JC route, get stronger, get games, and then look at those players when they're going to be a junior or senior in college. I think that's going to be a massive, massive thing for college coaches because, there's less room for mistakes.
Right. Yeah, there's less room for mistakes. So, geez, Andre, in summary, the way I've been thinking about this is, look, we know that there are going to be less roster spots available in college soccer overall. Fact.
Yep.
Fact. So that number is going down, which drives up competition, which means players better be able to immediately impact a program that has a roster cap of only 28. And look, a lot of youth parents out there watching youth games go, it's insane. Why do you need 28 players? That's crazy. Our youth team gets along fine with only 18 and everybody gets playing time. We win. Everybody's happy. And then why would you need 28 players on a college roster? And it's pretty simple. This is a physical level that players have never seen before. And the physical breakdowns that happen competing at this high of a level are at a much higher rate than we see them at the youth level. The amount of training they're going to do and the amount of time they don't have off to recover now at the collegiate level in the condensed season that it is in, you know, getting in so many games in 10 weeks, 12 weeks. Breakdowns are going to happen. Plus kids get in trouble, Andre. Plus kids need to be suspended. Plus kids don't go to class. Plus kids get homesick. Plus kids get all kinds of stuff comes up. Not even talking about the soccer end of it.
Yeah, but Don, like even think about like this, like that, you know, everything's like super, super perfect until the first week of school. And then they get hit with 15 credit hours of like being in class and having to study and staying up late. And then I always knew that I had to like figure out, okay, what's the timing of what we're doing in training and the stress level that they're going through right around midterms.
Right.
Right. Sometimes the freshmen, they just blow up. They just can't handle the psychosocial aspect of it. Like I can't handle all this stuff. I'm freaking out.
Right.
Right. And that like, okay, so maybe these four or five players are not able to physically compete because mentally they're just not there. Right. You just see it happening. And so I think you're 100% right. And parents don't understand that at the youth level because, I don't understand why why they need that many players. 28 seems like it's a lot of players. It's not. And then the other component is, man, I'm really trying to figure out what happens with these teams that have reserve teams, right? These coaches that have reserve teams, and all of a sudden the university is saying, hey, we need to do a roster cap, right? Yeah. I don't know if those schools are going to say, hey, we want you to do a cap of 28 players. I don't think that that's what they're going to look to do. Those type of schools.
Well, this, yeah, I don't know, man. And there are a number of thoughts that I have heard put forward by college coaches as to how they're going to get around this, how they're going to try to manage it. Do they talk their school into investing in the club system so that they can use those players as a developmental player, even though they won't be on the roster? They can actually use it as a developmental system. I've heard that one thrown out. How do red shirts come into this? Right? Yeah. Does a red shirt count against your roster cap? I haven't heard yet whether that is the case or not. Can imagine why it would be the case if you were saying we're not going to play this player, and if they're not getting money, can you just redshirt? Those are things I don't know yet.
Yeah, like what do you do if you're a gymnast at Ohio State, right? And all of a sudden they say, hey, we're pulling all your scholarships. Starting in 2025, all the scholarships are being pulled.
Yeah.
We'll fund you, you know, have a coaching staff. We'll, you know, you guys will travel, you guys will compete, you guys just don't have scholarships.
Right.
And that could very well start being the case. Like we will fund you as a varsity sport. You just won't have scholarships, but you'll compete against other Division I programs. Could happen. We're not going to compete as Division III.
Right.
Because the NCAA I think that's the next thing is the NCAA saying, you know what? The mandate for 14 or what is it, 14 or 16 division, like, having 14 to 16 sports to be Division I, classified as Division I, I think. And that's the thing that a lot of people don't understand. That's the difference between being Division I and Division II. It could be like a matter of two sports. Why are you not Division I and you're Division II? Well, because we have 12 sports and we're okay with 12 sports. We don't need 14 right. sports.
Right.
If we added two sports, we'd be we could classify as Division I.
Right.
Right. So I just, there's a lot that's going on. I know there's a lot to process, but I really do think that kids need to get some good information in terms of like what's really out there. And what I always like is when we get coaches ask us like for needs, specific needs, when they say we need immediate impact players that are older, then we know exactly not to say, okay, take a look at this freshman. Right.
Right.
Cause that's not what they're looking for, right? They're looking for someone that can come in and make a little bit of a different impact.
That is the phrase, by the way, that we have heard increasingly come up over and over again over the last few years. And the frequency is increasing, I guess I should say. And that is immediate impact players. Impact players. Yep. That means proven product, mom and dad, by the way. Proven product.
And I would also emphasize is that the programs at universities that don't opt in, you have a greater chance of going there and develop and to become an impact player than the programs that opt in. You will have hardly zero room for development because they have the roster cap of 28, right?
Right.
So if you are in a program, if you're looking at a program and you feel like, man, I still need a year or two to kind of develop and kind of get, you know, into the, like those programs will invest in you in terms of like, hey, you can come here, you can train, you can play. We don't have an immediate need for you, but we have room to add you to the roster and it doesn't hurt us in terms of a roster cap. Right. And because we can carry 35 players, but it's the programs that have 28 players. And that's the part that I think a lot of people don't understand. Maybe four players are going to be out of that. A class of 28, that's seven players per class. Let's say maybe four freshmen, three transfers. So that freshman class has gotten even smaller.
That's right.
Because they're going to go look at the transfer portal, whether it be other kids, Division II kids that are all Americans, or junior college players that can be high impact players.
Yeah. Yeah. The old saying, best player available, becomes more and more relevant, I think. They don't care where they come from. Coaches are going to care less and less, especially with the smaller roster caps. They just need players that can immediately impact their program and help them win games so they can keep their jobs.
Yes. And then also I think some kids need to have some realistic conversations about the finances, about transferring, you know, like we always talk about, like if you pick a school and figure out if the finances match what it could be if you weren't playing soccer. That scholarship is not there anymore.
Funny you say that. I hadn't thought about this in years. My son was on about $8,000 a year out of pocket at a Division I school, and then talked about transferring. And some of the schools he were mentioning transferring to were very expensive. And I said, fine, but you've got to figure out how to pay for it because we're not paying any more for it. You can stay there and write out your scholarship if you want to transfer. It's going to come out of your pocket. You're going to have to figure that out. I think in this economy, Andre, I think it would be wise of parents to consider that as they advise their kids what to do. As you said, if it's soccer only that you're going to school for, I don't know. My advice is then go play pro. I mean, if you're that good and it's soccer only, maybe go different route.
I think that has to be something that you really think about when you're transferring. Like, am I leaving? Like, I had players that quit playing when I was coaching, but very rarely did they transfer. They stayed at the school. So that told me that as a college coach, I did as good of a job as I possibly could to make sure that the kid was coming to school there because it was the right.
Yeah, I like that.
The right complete package. Right. Like, even if you decided not to play because maybe you weren't getting the playing time, maybe you didn't love it anymore. Maybe you wanted to go hang out and do different things. You wanted to join fraternity or sorority and get involved in different things on campus.
Sure. Injuries are chasing you around too much, blah, blah, blah.
And they're like, maybe they didn't like me as a coach, whatever.
I don't imagine who would. It happened probably. Andre, that's crazy, but go ahead.
No, go ahead. Anyways, right. So, as long as they stayed on that campus, I knew that I did the best job I possibly could.
Sure. It was the right fit for them. The institution was good for them.
And I always told them that. And I would always tell them, make sure that if you don't want to play soccer anymore, this is the right school for you.
Sure.
And they did. And I think now with, like, we talked about how easy it is to transfer, how commonplace that, you know, talking about it like we are, about getting in the transfer portal. I think you got to really think about if I leave here and I got to start all over again and it's going to cost me double or triple the cost just to say that I'm doing this, is it worth it?
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. Well, a lot of craziness come in and, you know, part of the problem that college coaches have, and you and I are looking at this, of course, we have to, our brains can't help it, looking at this from the college coach's perspective. We spent over 50 years coaching in college between the two of us. And the problem with the transfer portal is there's just not much information. First of all, junior college players aren't there. NAIA players aren't there. Very few Division III players are there because they don't have to be. Some are, some aren't. And then Division I and Division II, NCAA, Division I, Division II players would be in the transfer portal. And there's very little information. So I know as a college coaches, we've talked about how hard that would be. We talked about it earlier in the podcast, how hard that would be to just get through the Division I and the Division II players, let alone the Division III and the NAIA and the NSCAA, man, the junior college players and across the country that are trying to transfer. Wouldn't it be great if there was one place, like one portal where you could see not only all the players that were transferring, but you could see their film and their major and their budgets, how many years of eligibility they have left, maybe a little bit about them. So you could use it like as a shopping list and you could see film and full match film and you could have real information in real time about players that were looking, actively looking to transfer.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've come up with a solution for it, Andre, and I want everybody to, we're just announcing it, but if anybody wants to know more about it, you can just go to collegesoccertransferportal.com. So super simple. We couldn't make the name any simpler. collegesoccertransferportal.com. Of course, 4-year players, you wouldn't want to do this, right? Until you talk to your coaches and you've gone to your compliance officer and informed your team and your captain that you're not going to be coming back. You're going to be transferring. You wouldn't want to do this at this point of the season, but junior college players should be actively, freshmen and sophomores, actively investigating the process if they're able to transfer now. So junior college players that were NCAA qualifiers prior to starting junior college could technically transfer as freshmen, but definitely sophomores that are going to be graduating from junior college could be going into the collegesoccertransferportal.com right now. And you could be putting up your film. You could have coaches that are looking for players that have experience in college that are looking to pick up some quality. So I'm excited about this, Andre, and I think it's going to help a lot of kids. And by the way, right now it's free. Don't know for how long it's going to be free, but right now it's free to players to sign up for.
Awesome. Yeah.
I hope it helps.
It would have helped me as a junior college coach. So getting my kids exposure.
Yeah, for sure. It would have helped all of us that coached in junior college. Well, thanks, Andre, for coming on and discussing this hot topic with us. I'm hoping it helps some parents. By the way, if you've got any questions, Andre, people that want to get a hold of you, what's the best way for people listening to this to get a hold of you?
You know, you can always follow me, LV Hoosier GK, on Twitter, or you can email me at Andre@srusasoccer.com.
And of course, info@srusasoccer.com. If you've got any questions about the company in general, Andre, thanks again. Appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Awesome. All righty. Perfect.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.